Good afternoon. Welcome to this online conference on the biodiversity hunting country. Ensuring a healthy balance between Europe's food systems and biodiversity conservation. I'm Brian McGuire. I'll be moderating the panel today. But for welcoming remarks, I'd like to introduce Mr. Alvaro Amaro, MEP, president of the Intergroup. Mr. Amaro, if you can press the button and you begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, all. I would like to welcome you here today on this second online event of our intergroup, Biodiversity and the Farm to Fork Strategy. Our intergroup plays an important role raising the voices of the various stakeholders that are directly involved in the rural world. Food supply chain and biodiversity conservation at European level. It's crucial that we contribute to implementation of this strategy. This is why we are organizing today's webinar after our last webinar 3 months ago of the biodiversity strategy. Before starting the real talk, I would like to thank you so much. Our today's speakers, my board colleagues, our moderator, and our secretariat, Ilo and Face. Thank you all for having accepted our invitation. We have a good compromise between technical, political, and empirical knowledge amongst the various views so that we can have a fruitful debate.
Mr. Amaro, thank you. I hope we didn't cut you off there, just on the Wi-Fi. Just some housekeeping before we go further. So you know we have a full agenda today. We have quite precious timekeeping with a lot of speakers, and then we have time for a Q&A at the end. So just run through some basic things today you'll be familiar with most. French translation, though, you may not be so familiar with. In the middle of your screen, you'll be able to choose English or French for the audio channel selector. So if you haven't done that yet, go to the audio channel selector at the top of the screen, about the middle, and you can have a drop-down option of English or French there. Just click on your preferred button. I would ask the speakers just to stick with the rules for the timing today as well, and for all of you just to stay muted during the meeting. Only push on the speak button when the chair gives you the floor, and please keep your camera on unless it affects the quality of the internet. If you want to add something to the discussion, please push on the raise hand button and we'll come to you as soon as we're able to do that as well. And we have two of the vice presidents of the intergroup with us today as well. They will each speak for about 10 minutes each. They'll be followed by keynote speech and then panel discussion, then the Q&A today. So let me just introduce the first of our vice president of the intergroup today, Jeremy Dessel, French MEP, and the floor is yours, sir. You press the speak button. Hi.
Merci beaucoup. Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Donc moi je voudrais remercier.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to you all. I would like to thank my colleague Alvaro Amaro and of course Elo and the Face for allowing us to have this webinar on this very important topic. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to speak to you today together with my colleague Carmen Avram. The other vice president of the intergroup. I think it's very important for us to talk about those strategies which are paramount for the intergroup we have chosen to chair. The Farm to Fork strategy is a way for Europe to link up the the challenges of biodiversity, food, and fight against climate change. I think several concrete proposals have been made as a result, for example, of the strategy or inside the strategy, in the framework of the strategy, for example, the reduction of the use of pesticides by 2030, also the strengthening of the legislation about animal well-being, the development of organic farming, the growth of organic farming, and all the issues related to the labeling system. All these are also elements of this strategy. The strategy includes a large number of proposals, which are good ideas that respond to the requirements of society, but they are not really realistic, in my opinion. They lack realism, because at the end of the day, it will be up to the farmers and the rural stakeholders, also the hunters, it will be up to them to implement those policies in the field, to turn them into a concrete reality. And when we think about all those measures and design them, I don't think we take very much into account the stakeholders in the field and their capacity to achieve them. So I think it's very important to make sure that the policies we adopt, that are adopted, are consistent. And I'm very pleased to speak to you as a rapporteur about the strategic aspects of the CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy. I think it would be a good idea for us to try and find the relationships that there can be between the CAP and all the issues dealt with in the farm-to-fork strategy. I don't think farmers have to be economically punished. They should not be punished. In the reform of the CAP, the new requirements should be taken into account in order to provide the farmers with the necessary financial support to implement the different mechanisms we are putting in place, or we want to put in place. So I'm standing next to my political group and next to all the other political groups too. We are trying to articulate as best we can this farm-to-fork strategy with the biodiversity strategy and the Green Deal, and all this with the reform of the CAP. Many of you have already heard about this, but we've had on the table the famous eco-schemes, which are an ambitious strategy. They are meant to secure packages of dedicated aid. Through these eco schemes, what we would like to do is make sure that the changes that take place on farms in Europe, in the fields of environment, ecology, changes of practices, we would like to make sure that these changes of practices are paid for and that farmers get the money and the resources that allow them to do it as best they can. And what we propose in the forthcoming pack is to strengthen the risk management tools. Nowadays, farms are forced, or, well, in any case, they are grappling with all sorts of risks, climate-related risks, economic risks, but also health risks. So it's very important that in tomorrow's CAP, we should be able to make tools available that help them manage those risks, and tools that should be better adapted to the reality, to what really happens in the field. So this is what I wanted to say, and about what should be integrated into the farm-to-fork strategy. And I would like to wind up my intervention by saying that it is no doubt very important to make estimates with figures to to turn the environment into figures. In the farm to fork strategy, we say that we're going to reduce by 50% the use of pesticides. It is a symbolic figure. But behind all this, our responsibility is to set up efficient mechanisms for farmers, efficient for the farmers. They should be also efficient for the hunters and all the field actors, all the stakeholders, which will be affected by our decisions, by our ecological and environmental decisions. So let's try and be as consistent as possible. This is what I wanted to say as an introduction. Thank you very much for your attention.
Let me turn the floor over to Carmen Avram, MEP, and also Vice President of the Intergroup. Carmen Avram, hi, how are you today?
Hi, how are you?
Good, the floor is all yours.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Alvaro and to congratulate him for the work so far as president of the Biodiversity Hunting Countryside Intergroup, for his implication and for the initiative to organize such an interesting event despite the difficult conditions triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. And also thank you, Jeremy, for the very interesting presentation and for your passion on this subject. I have followed closely the activity of this intergroup, and I must say I believe it's one of the most active intergroups in the European Parliament, and I'm sure we all of us are going to do together a good job in the future as well, just to stay together. Second of all, I want to express my gratitude for the Secretariat of the European Federation for Hunting and Conservation and the European Landowners Organization for their work and for the smooth running of these events. Last but not least, I welcome the presence of all the speakers today, and I'm sure this hour and a half will only lead to constructive exchanges of views and conclusions for the future policies. Given their passion for nature, hunters engage every day right across Europe to conserve biodiversity. However, in the last decades, the 7 million hunters community was a first-hand witness of the decline of huntable, non-huntable wildlife populations, pollinators, and plant diversity due to biodiversity loss. But reversing biodiversity loss requires a more considerable effort, and it can only be successful if there is a strong political will to take a new approach. Through the Biodiversity Manifesto put forward by FACE, hunters welcome the political will expressed by EU lawmakers to design a comprehensive approach to deal both with the issue of biodiversity loss and unsustainability of food systems. Therefore, I believe hunters must ally with all those fighting now for the Green Deal and its achievement of targets by 2050. One of the instruments they could both help become reality and benefit from is the farm to fork. This is a strategy which outlines an ambitious approach to make food and farming systems more sustainable. Let us not forget that Europeans are more and more aware of the food they are consuming, and not only they feel the need to understand, but they also feel the need to check where the food comes from. The trend shows us that consumers prefer more and more locally sourced products. And here comes the opportunity for hunters to deliver one of the most healthy fresh meat on the market. As underlined by the farm to fork and biodiversity strategies, which are the heart of the Green Deal, of course, the targets can only be achieved with a common agricultural policy post 2020, which has a strong environmental focus. As you know, the negotiations are tough, but about to end. And the main idea is to set a bridge over the gap between these two strategies and the new CAP to make sure that the targets stemming from the two strategies are fully taken into consideration in the national strategic plans. But we must not forget that also the farmers, which are going to turn the new CAP into reality, are our allies and must be part of the solution instead of being burdened with more than they already have on their plates. As an S&D Agri shadow rapporteur on the new EU forest strategy, which we are going to vote actually next week in the plenary, it was my duty, and I made sure it will be implemented, to emphasize the role of agroforestry. Not only it is offering ecosystem services, but it also provides a perfect environment where the needs of the producers, consumers, and hunters are reconciliated. Agroforestry, by its definition, preserves the soil, is an indirect way of afforestation and reforestation, helps the farmer to be more productive, and contributes to the preservation of different habitats important for the hunting community. The breaking news is that within this new EU forest strategy, agroforestry is dedicated a whole compromise. So all the systems should be in place next year. The only thing is to know how to take advantage of them and keep our union on its track to climate neutrality. Thank you.
Carmen Ivan, thank you so much for the excellent intervention, and we'll come back to you later on with some questions, I hope, as well. Our keynote speaker today is Alexandra Nikolakopoulou. She's head of unit at the Farm to Fork Strategy, DG Sante, at the European Commission. Are you online with us today? If you press the button just to speak, you should come visible. Just give a moment. There we go. Hi, we can see you now. Okay. Hi, very welcome. If you press the speak button, we can hear you clearly. Okay. Okay, are you able to speak? Maybe you can't hear us. Just give a moment. I lost again. Just give us one moment and we'll resolve this technical issue. Okay. And we just bring your presentation up. There we go. Thank you. Just to say to our audience, if you can send questions in on the chat panel as well, we'll try and organize those into either individual questions or groups of questions if they're themed accordingly as well. If you want to address it to someone in particular, please identify who that is. If you're an MEP, you will have priority for the questions today, so please identify yourself as an MEP. We'll put your questions first. You don't have to wait till the Q&A session to send the questions. We'll arrange those now, and it's more useful for us if you send those in as soon as possible, and you can do that. And you'll be able to raise your hand to speak if you're an MEP later on as well. Are we good to go on the audio now? Okay. Madam, can you press the speak button and you can begin the presentation? Okay. Maybe we need to switch to one of our other speakers and come back in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, not working. Okay, is Professor Alan Buckwell ready to speak? No. Okay, we've got you now. We see you now. Okay, can you press the speak button and then you can begin the presentation? Hi. There we go. Okay, can you hear me? I don't think you can hear me actually. Just one second. Can you hear? No? So we're sending message by chat to make sure that this can be connected. Okay, we have questions come in already. And one question from Dorian Rookmacher. I've been informed that the biggest population growth is the threat of biodiversity. Why isn't this issue addressed in the presentation? Maybe it will be, let's see. And Robert Kenwood, managing farmland for production and human health. Consideration is complex, especially so if wild foods, other biodiversity and wider ecosystem services. Rather, could farmer clusters perhaps be organized by hunters in the UK to help manage the complexity? I think we should move on to one of our other speakers and come back to the European Commission. Is Alan Buckwell ready to speak? Professor Buckwell, if you are, just open your microphone and we'll begin. Hi, there you are. Okay, sorry, Professor Buckwell, we think we can go to the Commission now. Okay, just okay. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And Alexandra, are you able to press the speak button and you'll be able to begin your presentation? We will put the PowerPoint. Hi.
Hello.
Excellent. Good to have you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfectly. The floor is yours.
My presentation, is it available? Can you see my
presentation? Your presentation is coming up on the screen in just a second. Thank you for your patience. Okay, 1 second, and there it will be displayed. There we go. Okay, there's your presentation. And you may begin now. Thank you.
I still wait to see my slides. Can you see them on the screen?
Yes, we can see the screen and we can see the slides. If you want, if someone wants to see this, the presentation in a larger format, press on that screen and it will enlarge for you as well.
The problem is that I cannot see my presentation.
One moment. Can you see the smaller version at the bottom of the screen? No. Okay. I think Professor, let's go to Professor Buckwell now, and Alessio, who's doing technical side beside me here, he will resolve this question for you. And we'll get this running smoothly for you as well. Professor Buckwell, are you able to continue now? He's gone for tea.
From the commission, but I'll go ahead in any case. Broadly speaking, it seems to me that European societies agreed generally on the goals of the Green Deal, and I've not seen any organisations who've rejected them. So I think we were agreed on the direction of travel. The problem as far as land management and the food system concerned, because there is a problem in my view, is that there's several pieces of the jigsaw that are missing. I think some of them will be put in place in the coming year or so, but until we clarify two or three quite big issues, then I think we'll run into problems about getting sufficient enthusiasm from, as Jeremy has already explained, from the people on the ground who have to implement this strategy ultimately in the way that they manage their land, that we've got to gain their confidence and their full enthusiasm. And until we resolve some of these difficulties, I don't think we'll get there. Let me flag what I'm trying to say here. I think we've all agreed there are four challenges out there we're trying to deal with: the climate challenge, the biodiversity crisis, the diet and health problem. And I was certainly expecting that our colleague from DG Sante would be saying more about that. And the fourth challenge is farming's position in the food chain and the imbalanced in market power in the food chain. Those are the challenges. And the Green Deal and the two strategies under it that have been so far published go some of the way to dealing with some of those problems, but there's some significant holes in the analysis as I see them. So that, let me just explain what I'm saying. The first is that everyone's agreed that we've got to do something to halt and reverse the decline in biodiversity, and of course to halt and reverse the global heating that's going on. As far as the biodiversity is concerned, the principal thrust of the proposals in the Green Deal and the two strategies is what I would say is a de-intensification of our food system. And that's perfectly logical and understandable, but there's a very big but. If we're going to push more of our agricultural production down the lines of organic farming, of agroecological systems, which are by design less intensive, they use less inputs and they therefore produce less output per hectare, then they do it with, generally speaking, higher food prices, then we've got to square those higher food prices with the population. And that's not simple and that's not straightforward at all. And the COVID crisis has made that abundantly clear, that we've got a lot more unemployment and people who've lost their jobs because of the way we're having to deal with that crisis. And we can see an increase in food poverty across Europe. And pushing food prices up, therefore, is not going to be a massively popular thing to do. The second dimension of de-intensifying European agriculture by being more stringent about the way we use fertilizers and crop protection products is this will create trade tensions. Farmers understandably will say, well, are we going to import foods produced in other countries using these technologies which are frowned upon in Europe? How are we going to deal with that? And those issues are not yet frontally handled, and of course you won't get the full confidence of farmers until they are. The second missing consideration is the provisions we're going to have to make for climate protection. I think we can all understand that agriculture has to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions, just as all sectors do, energy, transport and so on. Agriculture, farming's got to play its part. But farming can't eliminate its emissions by 2050. I think there's nobody who thinks it can. Therefore, the way that it's suggested that we deal with that is that we have to reallocate some agricultural land towards carbon sequestration in soils and biomass, principally, and peat restoration, and incidentally, for more space for biodiversity. And again, this poses a seriously difficult question. Are we simultaneously going to reallocate agricultural land for these other purposes, for societal reasons, and at the same time de-intensify the production on the remaining land? That's a difficult balance which needs a lot more investigation. And that's quite apart from the details, which the two MEPs quite rightly have pointed to, that the CAP, as it's currently being reformed, really is not up to the full challenge that we're placing before it. It's not at all clear how the ecosystem as currently conceived can do enough to bring about the kind of scale of changes we're talking about. Let me just finish 2 minutes on one other specific aspect of this. I recently, with the RISE Foundation, produced a report on the future of crop protection in Europe. And we acknowledged, as a result of spending a long time and talking to everyone concerned about the way we do our crop protection in Europe, we came to the conclusion that it's not sustainable environmentally and therefore it has to change. And it's quite right, therefore, that the Green Deal agrees with that and is proposing that. In our view, though, this can only be tackled by a combination of measures. Yes, there is a place for pushing more of our agriculture into systems of farming that restore ecosystem functioning. My word of advice is this: don't solely focus that on organic farming. If we're going to codify sustainable agriculture as only organic farming, we'll be stuck in the rut that we're in with that, which is that it simply isn't growing fast enough. And incidentally, you've not only got to change the production system, you've got to change the willingness to buy those products too at higher prices. The integrated pest management is a perfectly intelligent tool. We're not pushing hard enough on getting it in place. That's the second tool. The third tool is there's a great deal more that we can do with biocontrol, but the regulations for biocontrol are not currently suitable. The fourth point is, of course, there's scope to more intelligently apply the fertilizers and crop protection chemicals we're currently using. Precision agriculture, robotics, artificial intelligence, these are technologies which can go further in reducing leakage and reducing collateral damage from continuing use of synthetic chemicals. And then the fourth fifth element in our view for dealing this with this issue is there is a place in our view for trying to internalize a resistance to pests and diseases within crops. And why would we turn our backs on the best that biotechnology can offer us for this? So another look, as is now beginning to happen, on gene editing and the technique, the new breeding techniques that are becoming, that have become available in the last decade, and getting a correct legislative framework to allow the appropriate development of those technologies is another contributing factor. So we've got to bring together those various elements before I feel we've got a truly coherent strategy, but we're moving in the right direction. Thank you for your time.
Professor Buckle, thank you so much, and thanks for stepping in at us. We're going to continue with our speakers and then come back to our keynote speaker in just a few minutes. Our next speaker, if he's ready, Francis Bruna. Mr. Bruna, are you there? Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you.
I'm there. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm just waiting for my presentation to pop up so I can see what I'm actually planning to talk about. There we go. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, friends and project partners who I know are there quite numerous to scare me and hopefully also support me in some way if necessary. I hope you all sit comfortably and enjoy my little presentation here this afternoon. I'd like to start by thanking FACE and the ELO for their kind invitation to allow me to present the Partnership Project to you all this afternoon. I will tell you a bit about who we are, what we aim to achieve, and most importantly, how we go about it. But I have to warn you, I've been given only 10 minutes, and so don't expect too much. There is, as you all know, a big problem out there on Europe's farmland. Biodiversity keeps declining at an alarming rate, and people are increasingly unhappy about it. Not surprisingly, really. And so the big question here is, how can we make the transformation from the current food system to a much more sustainable one? A system where farming works with nature and not against it. Supported by well-informed consumers. It seems to me that the farm to fork strategy, if I understood it well, because it's a rather complicated document, I must admit, aims to achieve exactly that. But many currently ask, and maybe that's because of how complicated it seems, and the professor has just alluded to it, how can this work in practice? And can it be really done? Well, if you are one of these people who doubt or have some doubts, maybe the Partridge Project that I'm going to send you can provide you with some suitable answers. I shall certainly try. So the next slide, please. So who are we? We are the Interreg North Sea Region Partridge Project, a collaboration of 14 partners who sit, as the name implies, in the North Sea region. And what do we do? We try to demonstrate to you all how to restore farmland biodiversity by 30% by 2023. And we don't just talk about it, we demonstrate it at 10 demonstration sites, which are dotted around the North Sea region, as you can see on this little map there in the corner. We have 2 demo sites in Scotland, 2 in England, 2 in the Netherlands, 2 in Flanders, and 2 in Germany. Next slide, please. How do we actually go about this in practice? We have implemented at these 10 demo sites, which are all 500 hectares in size. So we work with several farmers at each site, as you can imagine. We have implemented 70-10% high quality habitat measures. And these measures are not just the old field corner or a grass margin cut in the middle of the breeding season. These are, as I just said, high quality measures. Our main measure is the wild flower mix, which you can see in the bigger picture here and in the top left, but also floristic enhanced grass margins, beet banks, conservation headlands, arable margins, the lot. Next slide, please. We haven't just scratched these things about out of sheer fantasy. We have used a science-based approach here and also taken practical demonstrations from across Europe to inform us. And as it happens, we have just published a booklet, which we are rather proud of. It's, I've got it here. Which is called Farming with Nature, which summarizes everything that we have implemented in this project, in this little book. You can get it in English, in Dutch, and in Flemish at the moment, a little bit later in the year also in German and in Danish. You can download it from our webpage, or you can get it directly from the GWCT shop. You can see the little and it's very much supported by the farmer community, as you can see here, represented by the English foreword here by the NFU chairman, Minnit Batters. Next slide, please. All the measures that we have implemented at our 10 demo sites are tailored to our flagship species, the grey partridge, hence our project name Partridge. And this is because it's one of the best flagship species for farmland biodiversity, or generally speaking, farmland biodiversity health. And if you don't believe us, I suggest you have a look at this little publication, because in there we don't just summarize what works for partridges, but what also works for other farmland biodiversity as a result of that. Next slide, please. How can we go about this? We have used a bottom-up approach where we actively seek dialogue between all the stakeholders that we can possibly come across in the rural areas. So we work, of course, obviously with farmers, but also with the hunters, with advisors, NGOs, scientists, local, regional, and national authorities. And we bring them together. We bridge big gaps between them. We formulate local solutions to local problems. And next slide, please. We also involve MEPs and also, if we can, the EU commissioners, and possibly some of you might recognize themselves here on two of these photographs here. And I'm sure you all recognize Phil Hogan, who is was the commissioner until recently. Next slide, please. We work with more than 100 farmers and hunters across 5 European states, and they all work for the greater good in our project, even if some of them, might never meet each other in real life. However, we try our utmost to make this happen. So we go and visit each other in our different demo sites. So we bring, for example, Flemish farmers to England, or we bring Dutch farmers to Germany, and so on. Next slide, please. We have, as a result of that, already increased farmland biodiversity at all our demo sites. I'm not saying that we have reached the 30% target yet, but we still have two and a half years to go. But we definitely have increased certain of our key indicators, especially song and farmland birds at some of our demo sites by 30% already now. Next slide, please. As a result of our measures, we haven't only increased biodiversity, but also ecosystem services. I just present three of them to you here as a representation. We monitor all our indicators quite carefully. So, for example, earthworms as an indicator for soil health. We have also wild game as one of our ecosystem services, because more wild game means more sustainable meat available for the market. And I'm not talking about just game birds here, also hares and roe deer fall into this category, of course. And through our 7 to 10% implemented high quality habitat measures, we have also increased dramatically the pollinator habitats. Next slide, please. All this creates, as you probably can guess, an immense pride among our stakeholders, our hunters and farmers. Next slide. But in particular, the farmers, and this might come to as a surprise to some of you, I don't know, but we have some very proud farmers who are very, very proud of their achievements in terms of wildlife increases, as these two photos here illustrate. Next slide, please. The partridge also brings consumers closer to producers. Next slide, please. And also the producers closer to the consumers. And this means a healthier society, which is, I believe, quite in line with the farm to fork strategy. In this picture, you can see some farms from Switzerland who came to visit us here in the UK a couple of years ago. Next slide, please. Thank you. Partridge also started to help promote local farm produce. This is by no means one of our main aims, but that just happened sort of naturally and almost by accident. Next slide, please. For example, our Dutch partners, they are producing now pancake flour from wildlife-friendly farmland habitat. We think maybe eco-friendly labeling, and therefore, which is produced at our demo sites in the Netherlands. And I have one of these pancake flour mixes over here. I wish I had a bit more time, then we could do some online MasterChef lesson here and I would bake you some nice pancakes, but unfortunately we don't have time for that. Next slide, please. And also our Dutch partners, they may be the most innovative, I'm not so sure, it seems. They have also produced some very nice beer. I have one here. I shall drink it afterwards with the matching glass here also. You can see I pretty much, yeah, live the life in this project. This comes from nature-friendly farmland, and therefore this means more sustainable agriculture. Next slide, please. Now, I hope you agree that the Partridge project demonstrates that a healthy balance between EU's arable food system and biodiversity conservation is feasible. However, I'd like to stress here that this only works if the producers are compensated fairly and if the agri-environment system is flexible enough. The farm-to-fork strategy is a unique chance to make Europe more sustainable, wildlife-friendly and healthier for us all. But I would say especially for our next generation. Next slide, please. And this is my last slide. And so after this rather short and hopefully not too rushed presentation, I hope you agree with me. My partners and the more than 100 collaborators that work with us, that our project demonstrates one successful way to unlock the nature-friendly potential on our farms by using a collaborative approach based on science and also a bit of enthusiasm and passion, I might add. I also hope we managed to inspire at least some of the listeners today to take this unique opportunity in Europe's history and lead the world in the quest to restore what has almost been lost. Because if not now, I wonder, when are we going to do it? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francis. That was excellent. Francis is living life for all of us and for the nature. We have one more speaker, and I can see you're very active on the chat here as well. There's a lot of discussion going on as well as questions. So please keep that coming. We're taking note of the questions as we go through that as well. Our next speaker is Zeno Piatti. He's an organic farmer in Austria. Zeno, are you online? Just press speak. There we go.
Hi.
All yours, sir.
Hello, everybody. First, let me introduce myself. I'm a second generation organic farmer, farming on the Austrian Czech borderland, farming on both sides of the border. We're about 10 people cultivating 19 different crops on around 1,000 hectares. Since we have already experience of organic farming for almost 40 years, I want to share some of our experiences and insights. They are very much shaped by ups and downs and by many mistakes. And most of the mistakes were luckily made by my parents. But not in a way that they were stupid, but in a way that I think they were very courageous when they start to transform their farming at the beginning of the 80s and switch towards organic farming. Because not only were they not knowing if farming without synthetic supply is going to work, but also because they were embedded in a very conservative farming community. And it was not very accepted by that time to refuse to use those supplies. But there were two key drivers why this was working or why they decided to do so. So one thing was that there was a very obvious environmental deterioration coming from a Second World War industrial green revolution agriculture. And the generation shaped by DDT, Agent Orange and Bhopal. And the second one, that was a really dire income situation in for the farming community. And although Austria has not been at that part of the time part of the European Union or the GATT, but there was a consolidation on the income input supply sector and also at the output retailers, there was a huge consolidation happening and farmers were increasingly not being able to decide what to produce, how to produce, and under which conditions to sell. So that created a lot of frustration for them. And they were thinking about their situation. And I don't want to bore you too much about the production decisions of my parents at the beginning of the 80s, but I think there's one or the other lessons to be learned here. The one is that if you keep attention and you observe nature closely and draw innovative consequences from that, that you can really get good continuous yields over time. And that while getting good continuous yields, you're able to build up soil quality, steward biodiversity, and protect soil, water, and air. But I don't want to say that this is only possible for organic farmers. And I guess there are many organic farmers who are not able to do so. And I don't want to say that non-organic farmers are not able to do so. But I, just out of my experience and my environment, and also about knowing very well about the organic farming regulation, the limited way we can use supply, I'm convinced that there is a tendency, at least, that organic farming is more environmentally friendly. But this really hasn't only been one part of the trick. The other part, and this is also very important, is that people are willing to pay for this, right? So people are not only paying through tax money, but also paying out of their own pocket. And this really enabled us to grow as a farm. So we were able to sell our products, double the price of a conventional farm. And we had, I guess, 1/3 less of a yield on average. We get big support from the governments, Austrian and Czech government, for our environmental services of organic farming. And this really gave us the resources to experiment with crop rotation systems, to invest in new technology and innovations, and to grow as a farm operation itself. And jumping now to the Green Deal its strategies and goals, I want to say that, of course, I agree with the direction the way it's going to, because it recognizes the problems of our farmers, not only of our farmers, but also the problems that we are creating, of course. But I have more a problem of the goals, or rather, I would say, how those goals are defined. Because taking, for example, organic farming, to say we want to increase organic farming, that's perfectly fine. I mean, that's, out of my perception, it's a way to go. If it guarantees farmers a good income, that's good. But if you fix 25% organic farming and make it obligatory for the states, I think that is very problematic. Because if you just claim this without any strings attached, we will see a rise in production. This demand will be continuous, maybe a bit more increasing, but it will not keep up with the production. So what we're going to have is a huge loss in prices and a huge loss in income. So farmers will have a massive problem again. At the moment, I see a very big problem, because in Austria, conventional farming is really, really under big pressure. A lot of farmers are dropping into organic farming because they have bad market prices, and we have now an oversupply. So instead of getting now for premium wheat 455 euros a ton, we get now 300 euros a ton. And adding up, this is now the second year in a row where we have bad prices, and it's the second tractor I lose to invest in. And that is really a straight consequence out of oversupply. And I really have the fear that we are going to drift into this direction. We really have to see where is the demand going to. So generally, to sum it up, I see that we will have those environmental challenges, and we will have to face them. But this is only going to work, as Alan said before, we have to take land out of production and we have to de-intensify production. But where to take from the resources? We know farmers are getting less every year, so a bit tough to ask more resources from the farmers. We see the consequences in public policy. The common agricultural policy has decreased, actually, in real terms. So the consumers are to ask for, right? I mean, somebody has to pay for it. But which consumers and how redistribute those burden are along the consumers? Additionally to the consumers, I think it's very important to talk about bargaining power again along the food supply chain. It is important to increase the number of different stakeholders, important to improve the size of different machinery producers, flour mills, bakeries, butcheries, and most important, supermarkets. I'm convinced that we only get a fair long-term income and long-term price if we manage to increase competition all around the farming globe. And if it's the market that sets the price, I think bargaining power will determine its level. Thank you very much.
Zeno, thank you so much. We're going to come back with some questions to address what you spoke about in a few minutes. Now let's go back to our keynote speaker. Hopefully, We were able to go to Alexandra and Nicola Coppolo. Alexandra, are you able to join us this time? Just press the speak button.
Yes.
Hi, thank you. Excellent. The floor is all yours.
Yes, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes, we hear you perfectly in the presentation showing already.
Okay, so I will, when I will say next slide, please can you go on with the presentation. Alexandra Nikolakopoulou, I'm head of unit in DG Sante of the Farm to Fork strategy. This was created very recently after the adoption of the strategy. We have talked a lot. Unfortunately, I apologize for any technical problems. Clearly, the Farm to Fork strategy is at the heart of the Green Deal, and its ambition is really to create a fair, healthy, and environmentally friendly food system. As you know, the Farm to Fork strategy was adopted on the same day as the biodiversity strategy, with a short delay. It is not by chance that the two strategies have been adopted together, because clearly they have a lot of links, be it in relation to the targets, but also with the synergies that we can see, because it's true that the food can affect ecosystems, and ecosystems, healthy ecosystems, can ensure that we have a productive and resilient, sustainable system. Food system. So we should also say that this strategy was adopted even after the COVID crisis, clearly as part of the recovery plan and as part of a green recovery. Next slide, please. So the strategy aims to address the main challenges. You have already mentioned some of them, but I think it is important that we set the scene for our discussion. First of all, the social element of sustainability. We must address the growing number of citizens who suffer from hunger and malnutrition. There are really, in the strategy, very impressive figures. We're talking about 33 million citizens in the EU who cannot afford a quality meal every second day. At the same time, we have to address unhealthy consumption, which is a major challenge. When we know that in Europe today, over half of the adult population is overweight. And part of this population is suffering also from obesity. And these are really very pertinent numbers, knowing also that cardiovascular diseases and other non-communicable diseases were underlying factors also for the morbidity and the mortality from COVID. And it's true that in Europe, one out of five persons, they die because of diet-related diseases, mainly cardiovasculars or other forms of cancer. Now, going to the second element of sustainability, the environmental sustainability, here clearly we need to reduce greenhouse emissions. This is crucial. And the food sector, including the agriculture, will have to contribute by reducing emissions. In the EU, the agriculture is responsible for 10% of the greenhouse emissions, and 70% of this is related to the livestock sector. We also need to enhance biodiversity. This was clearly mentioned in previous presentations, and to create or recreate landscape features in the agricultural landscapes. Last but not least, we should also reduce food losses and waste. Today, about 20% of the food which is produced in the EU is wasted. And when we compare it with the previous figures that I mentioned about people who are hungry in the world, I think this is really immoral. And then we go to the third element of sustainability, which is the economic sustainability. And again, here speakers have mentioned it, because farmers and primary producers, they need fairer and better incomes. And it's true that currently their incomes, they lag behind other sectors. So at the same time, we need to attract young people to farming, and we need to protect our environment and the natural resources, so to ensure the future of food production. And we also need to create job opportunities. So addressing all these challenges in the three elements of sustainability in an integrated way, this is what will lead to sustainable farms operation. And I think this is something very important to keep in mind, because since the adoption of the strategy, we have seen very often discussions which are fragmented, which see only one dimension of the strategy, but neglecting the other or ignoring actions which tackle other aspects of sustainability. Let's go to the next slide, please. So the Farm to Fork strategy mentions four general goals. These are to reduce the environmental and climate footprint of the EU food systems,
I think we have a problem with the connection. Just give one moment to re-establish connection.
Me?
It's fine. You can continue. It's fine.
Okay, because I had some interruptions. I'm really sorry. Next slide, please. So we mentioned the targets. Here the strategy announces four targets which are quantitative for 2030, and these concern the reduction of chemical pesticides, the reduction of nutrient losses by at least 50%, and this should reduce also the use of fertilizers by at least 20%. Third target is in the area of antimicrobials. The fourth target is the one that we have mentioned about increasing the agricultural land, which is currently under organic farming, to achieve at least 25%. We should mention that these targets are not legally binding. These are aspirational targets that will, however, play a role when we evaluate our policies and when we implement the existing legislation. Also, in the CAP, which is currently under negotiations, the targets will play an important role. So member states will have to consider the objectives and the targets of the Green Deal and the biodiversity and the Farm to Fork in their national strategic plans. Here I would also like to emphasize that besides these quantified targets, we also have many other objectives in the strategy for which no quantitative targets per se have been set. But these are very important objectives, and in these include the promotion of healthy and sustainable food consumption, improvement of animal welfare, and also promotion of sustainable packaging solutions. Next slide, please. So I would like to mention some of the most important actions which are set out in the Farm to Fork strategy. To start with, there are two important overarching horizontal actions. The first one is the creation of what we call a legislative framework for sustainable food systems. This is a very important, complex initiative that will change the future way that we develop food policy and food legislation. For those who are familiar, you know that after the BSE crisis, we had adopted the General Food Law Regulation. This is the framework law on food safety, which, however, was considered not to be adequate to address in a recent evaluation the existing challenges of today in terms of sustainability. So this new proposal that will be put forward by the Commission in 2023 will be the basis to ensure policy coherence at EU and national level and mainstream sustainability in all food-related policies. The second horizontal action is the development of a contingency plan which aims to ensure food supply and security in times of crisis. Also, the need of such a plan that was linked to the resilience was underlined by the COVID-19 pandemic. Next slide, please. Now, I will present the actions that the Commission intends to put forward together with member states also and other food business operators along the food chain, starting first with a sustainable food production. So regarding the interventions that will take place at the level of primary production, clearly the new common agricultural policy will play a major role. This will be organized via the national strategic plans, where the member states will have to indicate how the various instruments of the CAP will contribute to the 9 objectives of the CAP, but also to the objectives of the farm to fork strategy. So this, for example, relates to the production of renewable energy, improvement of animal welfare, reduction of pesticide use, the new eco schemes, as well also the rural development programs will be quite important here. And all this is very well explained and detailed in a staff working document that the Commission presented and published also the same day as the adoption of the strategy, presenting and explaining the compatibility of the new CAP with the Green Deal objectives. Coming to pesticides, the Commission will revise the Sustainable Use of Pesticides Directive, and it will also strengthen the provisions on integrated pest management. It will also promote the greater use of safe alternatives for protecting harvests from pests and diseases. So the idea here is that integrated pest management will encourage the use of alternative techniques such as crop rotation and mechanical weeding. The Commission will also facilitate the placing on the market of pesticides which contain biological active substances and reinforce the environmental risk assessment of pesticides. Coming to organic, the Commission will put forward an action plan. The idea of this action plan is indeed to boost demand. So the idea how you are going to meet the target for the increase of organic production is also by linking the production to the demand. And this will help member states to stimulate both supply and demand. And here I would also like to mention that this demand can also be for organic, can be also further strengthened through the promotion campaigns as well as green public procurement, which is also part of our strategy. Regarding fertilizers, the Commission will develop with member states an integrated nutrition management action plan. And the idea is to address nutrient pollution and increase the sustainability also of the livestock sector. This would include the use of precise fertilization techniques, sustainable agricultural practices, and this notably in hotspot areas of intensive livestock farming. Next slide, please. Other actions also which concern the primary production is the improvement of animal welfare. There will be a revision of the legislation, including on animal transport and slaughter of animals. And the Commission will consider also options for animal welfare labeling. Revision also of the rules on feed additives in order to facilitate the placing on the market of sustainably innovative feed additives. In order to strengthen also the position of farmers and primary producers in general in the supply chain, there will be also actions in the area of competition rule for collective initiatives, and also in other areas, like, for example, the current pharma accountancy data network, which will be converted into the farm sustainability data network. The idea of this conversion to make it sustainable data network is to enable benchmarking of farm performance against other farms. So this, in combination with advice that will be tailored advice, will provide feedback and guidance to farmers who want to improve the sustainability performance. Next slide, please. So, as I said, the strategy encompasses all stages of the food supply chain, and it also recognizes the important role of the food processes and food service operators. There are many actions there who will help and contribute to shape the market and influence consumers' dietary choices. This is very important because actually the strategy recognizes the important role also of consumer demand, and it links consumer demand to consumer food production. Therefore, they will have a very crucial role in making our food system sustainable. So these actions concern improvement of corporate governance. There will be a development of an EU code for responsible business and marketing conduct, a reformulation of foods, setting up of nutrient profiles to restrict the promotion of foods which are high in fat, sugars, and salt, and other actions related to food contact materials, and also to marketing standards for agricultural fisheries and agricultural products. And the idea of the revising of the marketing standards is also to stimulate the uptake and supply of sustainable products. Next slide.
Okay, 1 minute left.
Yes. So, finally, I would also like to mention that there are important enablers I think, let me just see what slide you have to be sure. At the level of consumer, we mentioned that there will be many actions on food labeling to inform consumers about the nutrition performance of the food, but also in long term about a sustainable logo that will enable consumers to distinguish foods which comply with sustainability standards. All this strategy will be accompanied with important enablers in terms of research, innovation, investment, skills, and data. Important budget has been devoted to Horizon 2020, to the innovation Invest EU, and other mechanisms to facilitate advice and support SMEs. Next slide, please. So, what is important is that this strategy is not the strategy of the Commission. We make a proposal. This is a direction of travel, but it concerns everyone. It requires clearly a collective approach, and we need the discussion and with national public authorities at all levels, international, national, cities, rural, but also with other organizations, academics, and citizens. The Commission has already started a broad debate, and we have started now with implementation in the meantime of the various initiatives. All our proposals will be accompanied by impact assessments in line with the better regulation. And are looking forward to discussions on the individual proposals. And actually, we're working already very hard to comply with a very tight timeline. Actually, all the actions will have to be unfolded in the course of the next 4 years. So we need your support, and we welcome this kind of discussions, interactions, in order to make sure that everybody is on board. So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to an interesting discussion and questions. Thank you.
Alexander, thank you so much for that. Your last question, your last comment on the impact assessment wiped out half the questions, I think, but we're going to bring that back to you in a few moments. We're going to take questions for MEPs first. And we have an intervention from Simone Schmidt-Bauer, MEP and Vice President of the Intergroup as well. If you want to press speak, you should be heard right now. Hi, the floor is yours. We can't hear you. Just one second. And everything's in order. Okay. Please try again. Please press speak again. No, I can't hear. I'm going to just pass you back to Alessio for a moment, and I'll come back to you in just a second, okay? Thank you. Any other questions from MEPs, just raise your hand and the microphone will be opened for you. Simone, do you want to try again there? Simone, you need to check at the top of your screen on the left-hand side. It says device settings. Look at the microphone clip. So top, you're using touchpad, obviously.
She can ask by chat.
And you can ask by chat if that doesn't work, but okay. I'll leave you with Alessio just for a moment, and you ask by okay, we had a problem with connection. Alan, can I bring a question back to you as well? You spoke about food poverty. Alan, you still there?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so you mentioned food poverty, and a lot of the conversation was about also poverty for farmers as well, and squaring this circle of food prices, either production costs or consumption costs as well. And Alexander also mentioned 33 million across Europe can't afford a daily healthy meal as well. You know, how does this get squared? Isabel Lang gave us a question earlier, but you know, why are we not using more tax incentives, for example? What do you think about tax incentives and other solutions? How do you square the circle?
With difficulty. I think everyone's agreed that we have to reflect to consumers the real cost of the food and the cost to the environment, as well as the cost to farmers. And farmers, of course, need a fair return in order to make a living. So if we're not able to push food prices up slowly and steadily over time, poorest and least able to cope with that. And so that means welfare changes, which of course is a member state competence and not an EU competence. And so tax measures, which of course can be part of this, again, these are member state economic competences. And so that's why it's very difficult to arrange this. But at the moment, the difficulty is we're not talking about it. So that's why I think we have to confront this issue.
Okay, Alan, just are we not, Alexander did highlight health issues and the burden that Europe faces because of cardiovascular disease, because of diabetes and obesity and all the complications of that. Is there sufficient connectivity between these policy dimensions? Is the cost and the burden to the health service not being sufficiently invested in invest to save and passing that back to the farming community?
Wow.
in 10 seconds.
No, I don't know. I think the connection they're trying to make is already complicated. And as I've said, that even if Europe agrees and succeeds in slowly moving itself onto a higher food price plane, which incidentally will incentivize more careful use of food and perhaps a step in the direction towards better diets, but it needs a lot more than that. But this also needs a consideration about the border, the trade effects of this. This is our point, that the feasibility of this set of strategies has not been demonstrated. I think we're not going to get any further arguing for impact assessments, because we're going to be told they're only done when there's legislative proposals to be made. What we need is a feasibility study, a coherent and convincing feasibility study, to show how these elements fit together. Because at the moment, it's not at all clear how they do. And the food price underscores this problem.
Thank you. Alexandra, are you still there? Alexandra? I just want to ask you about the impact assessments. Yeah, Alexandra, if you can. Hi, welcome back. I just want to ask you about the impact assessments. We had a lot of comments on the chat about impact assessments. Can you outline, and you mentioned it at the end of your presentation, can you outline what kind of impact assessments are being done? And there was also a comment about the communication of this as well, that farmers are reducing greenhouse gases by 20% already, and yet they seem to be being accused of not doing enough quickly enough. What's your take on this, on the impact assessment, what's been done, and the communication of the strategy as well?
Yes, I think, first of all, can you hear me well?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly well. Thank you.
We are not going to reinvent new rules for the impact assessments. So we are going to follow these rules for each initiative. We are working now on the area of pesticides. There are impact assessments which are being prepared in the area of food labeling. But we have not done impact assessments for those targets which are not legally binding. Clearly, these targets are political. I think it is also important to remember and to emphasize the urgent need for action. We cannot, there are clear threats for the environment and for our future generation. So I think we have also the responsibility to act quickly. There are guarantees with the impact assessment, as I said. There are clause of review in this strategy. So we, in 2023 already, we are going to examine whether further actions are needed or whether some actions maybe are not necessary. So we take all what is needed to make sure that the strategy which is we take and we intend to develop is the right one. We have talked a lot about the prices. Yes, I think clearly there is also a need for the prices in the end to reflect the environmental and health costs. And it's true that at the beginning prices, they may increase. But what we must ensure is that the end value will be fairly distributed along the food chain, so that those who are investing in this transition, in the end, they can be rewarded. After all, the objective cannot be to keep prices as low as possible. One thing is cheap, and it's something different is affordable. So otherwise, if our objective is only the cheap prices, there is a risk that we promote the continued exploitation of our environment, the abuse of workers in the agri-food sector, promotion of food, which, while they are cheap for consumers, they have important consequences for their health and the cost for society. I think it's important to keep in mind. No, I lost.
Simone, if you press the speak button, let's see if this works this time. Okay, let's try. I'm sorry, I still can't hear you. Can you send the question in the chat and I'll read it out for you, please, or a comment in the chat and I'll read it straight out for you. Thank you. Okay, and some other questions that we had as well. Pedro Santos, Alan, maybe you want to have a go at this one. Standardization of payments in the EU. What more could be done for farmers in terms of standardizing payments in the EU? Alan.
The argument for all farmers getting the same payment in the EU is shallow and an appalling statement, in my view. What matters is what farmers are delivering, what it costs them to deliver, and that they're fairly rewarded for that. Farmers deliver very different combinations of market goods and public services, and the payments they get will reflect that. The leveling of ensuring that every farmer gets the same number of euros per hectare makes no economic or social justice sense at all. I mean, I simply don't accept that argument.
That was clear. That was clear enough. Thank you. other questions we have as well. Simone, are you able to put the question in there for us too? Henrik Vestorensen says there's a lot of land that can be used for agriculture, which does not represent great value for the farmers. We should start there. Multifunctional land coalition is the way to change that use of rural environment. And Mela Frewen, unfair trading practices drive food prices down. Yeah, what Zeno was saying earlier as well about the global scenario for the whole food structure and in terms of more competition being needed with the supermarkets. Maybe one of our speakers would like to comment on that. Hopefully that Simone's going to send a question in there too. Okay, we have a question from Simone, which is, first, how are our farmers supposed to provide food security when they're faced with challenges like a reduction of regarding pesticides or fertilizer putting out of use 10% of agricultural land? And second, when will we receive an impact assessment? Maybe Alexander, you want to tell us when the impact assessments are going to come? Maybe I missed that. At the moment, we are presented with targets that sound good to the general public, but practicing farmers need to know how they should continue to provide food security and survive economically. Thanks for the answers. Alexander, back to you. I always pity the commission representative. They get all the tough questions. Can you hear us, Alex? Press the speak button. Maybe she's still online.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, there
yes.
We go. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. The strategy does not have the direct intention to reduce intensity of the agricultural production. It is the use of certain inputs, such as pesticides, the fertilizers, and antimicrobials that will need to be reduced. So, and this will be done by, as I said, by making use of existing and new technology. We talked about integrated pest management and other precision techniques. So we are going to stimulate also innovative products. So we will invest amounts of money, research and innovation. And we should also not forget that the supply chain can compensate farmers for the use of more sustainable production techniques, which may, on the one hand, lead to lower productivity, such as higher animal welfare standards. We also consider labeling and certification schemes, which would facilitate this development, and they will make all the additional efforts of the farmers more visible. So I think this is, we should see all the elements together. Maybe you see one and you say, yes, we are going to reduce and to have less food. No, if there are the other alternatives that we propose, the aim is to ensure food security, which is an integral part and objective of the strategy. Food security, but with more sustainable practices. The impact Yeah, the men come. They will come in time and together with the proposals, all the legislative proposals, they will be accompanied with impact assessments.
Alexander, thank you. We're just going to have give the opportunity to the panelists and speakers for any final remarks just before Alvaro Amaro closes the session today. So thank you all for your patience. If you want to speak now, please press the raise your hand button beside the speak button, and then Alessia will open the floor for you. Alan wants to speak. Go ahead, Alan.
My final word is this. I'm absolutely unconvinced by piecemeal impact assessments, proposal by proposal. That's a way of not doing what's needed, which is an integrated feasibility assessment of the combination of measures in those strategies, plus the measures that will have to be taken for climate protection, because that's what's not at all clear. It simply doesn't stack up to reduce the variable inputs which have pushed yields up in European agriculture and say it's not de-intensification. Of course it is, and it's done in order to protect biodiversity. In order to square the circle, we've got to reduce consumption. And the Commission speaker was very clear about that. We're over-consuming to the detriment of our health. And so if we don't do the consumption measures, these strategies don't stack up.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. 20% food waste is really, as Alexander said, immoral. It's a shocking waste, and we should be far, far away from that figure. Final remark from Jeremy Dussel, MEP, and also Vice President of the Intergroup. Jeremy, the floor is yours.
Thank you. You must press the speak button if you want to speak.
Okay, can you speak, Jeremy? Otherwise, we're going to move over to close with Mr. Amaro. No, okay, let's go to...
That's a function.
It's working now. It's working. Yes, it's working. I'm sorry, apologize for that. Let's go. Before Mr. Amaro takes the floor again, I would just like to repeat that in this debate, in this discussion, we must be aware of the need for quality, for the high quality of farm produce and of food products in Europe. Of course, there is a lot to do to protect and restore the environment. But it's not that we wake up every morning with new fatalities because of food or farming. The life expectancy in Europe has improved thanks to our food. So let's not be fear mongers. Let's try to be as rational as possible. Let's understand what the farmers are already doing, because each country is... the countries are changing. What I mean to say is that when the representative of the Commission said, the CAP must be adapted to farm to fork, but I think that it is more the farm to fork strategy that must be adapted to what the farmers are able to do, and they must be in a capacity to do things. We should take their capacity into account. We are ahead of many other countries in Europe, and we need to move forward, to keep moving forward, of course, but slowly, gradually. We have a tendency to say, let's change model, let's go for the transition. But the farmers have not been waiting for the European Parliament, the Council, or the European Commission to realize that there was a climate change problem. The farmers are already doing a lot, and they're prepared to do more. more. So let's trust them a bit. And let's try to give them the resources to do more instead of saying outright that we're going to, that we have to reduce the use of input. We need to be rational in this debate. Thank you very much.
Okay, so that's the last words to Mr. Alvaro, and he will close the session. So that is from me. Thank you all for your participation today, for your lively exchanges on the chat today also, and for our team, despite the technical challenges, which are inevitable, I suppose, these days. And thank you to our speakers, our panelists, and to Alexander from the European Commission also. Mr. Alvaro, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this afternoon debate as much as I did. I will try not to repeat naturally what our speaker just said in those final words, and I will try to be brief. In fact, it's not easy to find the desired balance as we find ourselves facing such an ambitious strategy, and especially at a time when European farmers are already asked for so much. The words of my colleagues, Frank Bogovic, my dear Simon Schmidbauer, with the question, it's very important. And the words of Jeremy and Carmen that I'm appreciate so much. But without a balanced proposal, my dear friends, ladies and gentlemen, we will create structural disruptions with serious social and economic consequences. In the farming community, criticized that certain proposals lacking an impact assessment would endanger European agriculture and mislead consumers. They also welcomed the ambition to secure an European Union food policy that favors biodiversity and health. This strategy will provide the framework for a series of laws, ranging from a revision of the European Union pesticides, as my dear Simone said, and said very well, legislation to new animal welfare rules and plans to address the food waste, or the proposals to tackle food fraud and food labeling, a carbon farming initiative, and the reform of the European Union farm system. It is, we must say, fairly comprehensive and exhaustive. However, there is a rising number of answers lacking since the first communication came out last May, the month of May. It is almost the European Union of today alternatives. We must emphasize the benefits of new technologies, research, digitalization, and the need to improve efficiency in the use of natural resources. Therefore, we need more answer about traceability, about consumption chains apart from the production, whether they are more or less short, if these proposals allow farmers to have a fair income for their production. As said my colleague Frank Bogle, farmers are essential, as he said, and he said very, very well. Also about new breeding techniques and the precision farming, and especially about international trade, which might now become a bigger concern. I believe this strategy must be built in each of our member states on the lessons learned during this crisis, and should, in whatever form it comes, it must guarantee food security. In that sense, the transitional period will be crucial, Jeremy said now, and he said very, very, very well, will be crucial and needs to be accompanied by adequate incentives and investments for farmers to cope with the adaptation needed. Here, the recovery fund will play a very important task. In addition, if the European Commission affirms that they will bridge the gap between the strategy and the cap post 2020 by making recommendations to each member states before the official submission of their national strategic plans to be sure that the targets stemming from the two strategies are fully taken into consideration, the Parliament must be informed of those recommendations. Those discussions are already happening. We hope they will help to achieve effective and coherent food systems. I am a reformist. We are not revolutionary. So we must work for a reform, not a revolution. We shall see. Our intergroup here in the European Parliament will continue to be very active following the dialogue between the European institutions concerning this strategy, having in mind always that, I repeat, without the farmer, the farm, there is no fork. I repeat, without the farm, there is no fork. Before leaving, one last word to thank you, the Co-Secretariat, our friends of the Co-Secretariat of the Intergroup, our friends of ILO and FACE, they worked so much and they work very well with us. Thank you so much. But only for my colleagues, for you, our moderator, Mr. Ryan, thank you so much, because we have much difficulties to speak in this kind of meeting, but it's a new normal, as we say in my country, in Portugal. There was a new normal. A new normal is something like that. Once again, thank you all our speakers, our moderator, my colleagues, all of you, all the people that work with us and they listen with us. And for me, as president of Intergroup, I'm very proud, very, very, very proud. Thank you all. Thank you all for having stayed with us and for participating in this conference. I hope to meet you at the next events organized by the Intergroup. Thank you so much.
Muito obrigado, senhor, and good night to all of you. Bonsoir, and we'll see you all again soon. Take care.